ranked one of America's top research universities, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries on UWM today. Here's the host, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor of University Relations.
As we get older, there are many changes in our lives, both physical and mental. And while each one of us ages differently, one constant is the need for companionship and relationships. On this edition of UWM Today, we're going to explore two very different stories about how people deal with aging and the challenges that come with getting older. In the studio with us is former Wisconsin Governor Marty Schreiber. Marty's wife Elaine suffers from Alzheimer's disease, and he's written a book, My Two Elaines, about his experiences as both a husband and a caregiver. He has a powerful message that he is sharing with audiences around the country. Our other love story is told through the lens of documentary filmmaker Stephen Loring, who's produced a fascinating film about seniors who aren't ready to give up on finding that perfect someone to share their lives with. Their method? Speed dating. Speed dating when you're 60, 70, or even 80 years old. Marty and Steve will be on the stage together at UWM on March 1st for a program that explores relationships as people age. We're going to begin today's conversation with a third guest, Ron Sisler, the interim dean of UW-Milwaukee's College of Health Sciences, one of the sponsors of the special upcoming program. Ron also joins us by phone, although a little bit closer than Steve. He's on the UWM campus. And Ron, welcome. We're going to begin with you just asking about the program coming up on March 1st. Marty and Steve's story, how did you bring them together?
Well, Tom, thank you. The way we've approached this is through our UWM Partners for Health, which is a new initiative on our campus that is really looking across our health disciplines, namely the health sciences, public health, and nursing. And regarding the healthy aging, we recognize the importance of activity across the lifespan, quality of life, and the relationships we have. We have a couple of research centers that address this, including the Center for Aging and Translational Research, as well as our Self-Management Center at UWM. We're very interested in perspectives on how people age and how people have quality relationships, both in caregiving and in their own personal fulfillment. So we're thrilled to be part of this event coming up in March.
Well, let's talk to Marty first about his part of the story, because indeed it has been that playing the role of a caregiver and a loving husband. Marty, welcome to today's program.
Well, thank you. And before we get into too much more, having gone through now my wife's 14th year of Alzheimer's, I can't tell you how important it is what Dean Sisler is doing in his leadership role regarding Partners for Health. It's something that not too many people really want to talk about. It's something that people are hesitant to confront straight on. And that leadership, I think, is going to make a significant difference in people's lives.
What message will you share with folks on March 1st when they see both you and hear from Steve, who's going to be showing the film that he produced?
Well, maybe one of the main messages, I ran across a saying, rather than worrying about the storm to pass, to try and learn how to dance in the rain. Now, no person or no caregiver is ever going to dance in the rain. But the fact of the matter is, if we are smart and if we can understand what is happening, we can make a difference. We can snatch moments of joy from things that we think are just horrible. For example, I say if Alzheimer's is bad, ignorance of the disease is worse. And if you don't understand the disease, if you think you can argue with it, for example, if you think that you're going to be able to once again reach back and see the person who once was but is no more and expect the same things of that person, You have to learn how to give. You have to learn how to go on. And if you understand that disease better and understand what happens in the life of a person with Alzheimer's, it makes a difference in that person's life and also significantly reduces the anxiety and the worry and the depression, the grieving of the person who is the caregiver.
What prompted you to write the book?
When Elaine was diagnosed with this Alzheimer's, I had no idea what I was in for. And you can go to the library and you can see any number of books on the shelves regarding Alzheimer's, but none of them, I felt, really grabbed the person by the scruff of the neck and say, look, sit down here and understand what you're in for. And because I didn't know that, I learned some things too late. I did not learn things soon enough. Elaine and I missed out on moments of joy. And once I began to understand the disease and how it acts and what is happening to my second Elaine's mind, I then was able to roll with it. I was then able to join her world. And by joining her world, it made all the difference in my world because it just reduced the anxiety and the fear and all of those things that go along with this. It reduced it so significantly. And we have more laughs now. We may not know what we're laughing at, but we have more laughs. And we enjoy listening to music. And even though her Alzheimer's is advanced, we still have a meaningful relationship of our hearts touching. And I think the best example of our hearts touching is the other day when she said, when she started to cry, she says, I'm beginning to love you more than my husband. Well, I didn't ask her what's wrong with your turkey husband, but the fact of the matter is our hearts were touching, and that was simply the most important thing I could hope for and the best results that I could ever want.
I understand that as you began to realize the story that needed to be told, you came across some diaries that your wife had begun to write when she was first diagnosed.
Yes, and I thought I had told my story, but never until I saw her diaries and her journals did I understand the courage that it takes to be diagnosed with Alzheimer's and then to go on. We had prayed together and we had cried together, but never did I understand the true anxiety that she feels. And so many times she says, you know, she worries about the future. And she says, well, will you take care of me? I says, yes, I'll take care of you. Well, how long will you take care of me? And well, I wanted to make her feel good. So I said, Elaine, I will take care of you forever and ever and a billion years. And then she looks so sad. And then she says, well, why? I said, why are you sad? She says, well, I don't think I could take you that long. And so the point of the matter is, by reading her diaries, I was able to enter her world. And again, I just want to emphasize that any caregiver who is involved and wants to give the best to their loved one, you've got to enter their world because that's the only world that they know.
The relationship that you describe, that is what makes you continue, isn't it? The fact that you still have her.
Oh, the fact that now it's been 14 years, the average length of time of a person once diagnosed as far as lifetime is concerned is 5 years. And so now we're on year number 14, and as I said, she's in the advanced stages. But by the grace of God, she still is the gracious, kind, loving person that she's always been. And again, maybe not knowing who I am, maybe not being really too much aware of her surroundings, but she's comfortable and she is where she is. And by the grace of God, that's okay.
Does she ever remember you? Are there ever glimpses?
No, not lately. And no grandchildren remembering, no children remembering. But, you know, we get to the point that that's okay because this is the second Elaine, and I can no longer expect of the second Elaine what the Elaine, first Elaine was. And so I know that this second Elaine has a brain that's broken and therefore does not know who I am, does not know who the children are, but she recognizes me as a friendly face and a friendly voice. And what a wonderful experience that is.
I'd like to bring Stephen into the conversation as we talk about relationships. Stephen, as we talked to you sitting out in Brooklyn, which was your home base, as you produced a film that is going to be featured at the special screening on March 1st on the UWM campus. It's called The Age of Love, and you had very, very different experiences in terms of describing people at another stage of their life and the relationships that they are either in or hoping to have.
Yes, I'll get into kind of how the story came about, but I just wanted to mention, too, in listening to Marty's story, I was sort of wondering, this is a different way in to a story about aging, but in listening to the way he describes his love and the relationship and how important connection is with Elaine now, how it reduces the anxiety and the fear, it's not any different. I mean, it's a human need for reaching out to somebody, to defeat that solitude or loneliness, to be seen by somebody and to be held by somebody. It's really, in a lot of ways, the same message, and maybe we can talk about that together a little bit later. But, my story, I'm a filmmaker. I'm not a gerontologist. I really knew nothing about aging or issues that have to do with aging before something happened in my life that brought me to make this film. And what that was that my dad died. And my mom, who was in her early 70s at the time, and he died very suddenly. It was really unexpected. They seemed to be in great health. And suddenly she was without her soulmate for the first time in her life. And, you know, as a good son, I'm sitting there doing everything I need to do. I'm taking care of the insurance forms and getting investments moved over and making sure the house has a security system. And one night we're sitting there in the kitchen and she just says to me out of nowhere, "Who's ever going to touch me again in all the years that I have left? Who's just going to hug me or even share a meal?" And from being part of a team all my life, I've suddenly, in this moment, become just another old lady in the world who's alone. And that was like a really startling thing for me to hear. It was not, you know, on the checklist of, you know, what to do when there's a death in the family. And it was something that was really profoundly important to her, I could see. And oddly, that same spring, I had a 78-year-old uncle who had never married and who had never been on a date in his whole life, as far as we knew. And he moved into a senior residential community, and he met a woman who was 80. And essentially, in 3 weeks, they locked their bedroom door, and they were like teenagers again. It was like a total physical, emotional bond. And the idea, you know, I was his closest relative since he had no children. And the idea to me that watching him at almost 80 years old, capable and interested and just ready to plunge into this full-on love affair, which is something he never even had in his life, was really stunning to me. And so I guess my family, I was surrounded by a mother who had love every day of her life and was missing it, and an uncle who had never felt the experience of true love, who was just finding it, both at a time in life when we think that people are not even having those feelings at all. And I thought, well, there's got to be a way to, you know, they can't be the only people in the world in that age range who are dealing with stuff like this. There's got to be a way to tell a story that will open eyes and start conversations, and that's not people in lab coats describing medical research, but really is funny and engaging and shows us the voices, lets people speak for themselves. And so when I searched and finally found a speed dating event, which was a real speed dating event, really set up for people from 70 to 90 years old, and 15 men and 15 women were signed up for it, I thought, well, what a perfect way into the voices of a generation that we never hear. And if there's only some way I can get permission to film this thing, you know, how cool would that be?
I saw the trailer for the movie. You sent me a link to it yesterday, and it was stunning. It was remarkable because you did show both the setting in that speed dating environment where they're sort of eyeing each other up, checking each other out, and then off camera at home, seeing them in their own environs, the way that they have been, and discussing the way that they would like to be going forward. What a really, really powerful way to get to the humanity of people who a lot of times we stereotype because we say, quote unquote, they're old.
Right. Well, and there was also a transition that I discovered because, I mean, one of my fears in making the film was that, what am I going to shoot, right? I mean, these are just, I came with my own preconceptions, assumptions about aging, right? But I'm thinking, like, they're sitting in their homes. What are they doing? What is going to be visually exciting about this? And what I found is that, I mean, I'll say in advance, I ended up with 168 hours of incredible footage, which I had to whittle down into 78 minutes for the film. So obviously, once I was involved in these people's lives, and they were involved in something that took them out of their daily lives, there became so much to film, because you could see as the event, just to be clear, I started filming when the people, you know, when I first met them before the event, several weeks ahead when they were preparing for it. Then we go into the speed dating event itself. Then I'm with each person as they open up their results envelope and see who they matched with. And then I follow several couples as they go out on their first date afterwards. So over the time they were preparing for the event, it became like, well, it's just something I'm doing. It's more fun than bingo. It'll be something fun to talk about at lunch with the girls. But as it got closer, you could see that it meant a lot more than that, because we don't have opportunities in our society to meet, to connect, to express who we are inside like that once we get past a certain age. And the people, I mean, one woman, I filmed her three times, and by the third time I was there, I came in and she said, before we start shooting today, could you just come in my bedroom and look at three outfits I set out and tell me which one you think the men would like the most? And one of the guys, I remembered, had worked with his son to set up a list of questions that he thought would be impressive to the women and wanted me to go over them too. And by the time these people in their 70s and 80s actually appeared in the speed dating event, they were like, it was like walking into a high school prom. There was such a feeling of anticipation in the air, and people were dressed to the nines, and they were, you know, really ready, to excited that they could be who they wanted to be again, and they had permission and they had a place to do it. Almost like my uncle, who just, you know, the child part of them, the young part of them, the hopeful part of them wasn't gone. It was just inside waiting for an opportunity to be expressed.
Waiting. That's a part of what I think a lot of us fear the most. And we're going to explore that in just a moment. But for those who are just joining us, let me remind you that you're listening to WUWM. This is UWM Today. I'm Tom Lujack, and joining us in the studio is former Wisconsin Governor Marty Schreiber, and on the phone of documentary filmmaker Steve Loring. Both will be appearing on a special panel March 1st at UWM that is going to allow Marty to talk about a book that he wrote about his wife Elaine, who's suffering Alzheimer's, and Stephen will be showing a film that looks at relationships of people over 60, 70, and yes, even into their 80s. Ron Sisler is also on the phone with us. Ron is dean of the College of Health Sciences, which is one of the sponsors of the event on the UWM campus. Ron, as you listen to Marty and listen to Steve describe the product of their work, that really the product of their life experiences, as an academic, as a researcher, what does it say to you about what we don't know of aging?
Well, this is a perfect transition, because I am proud to say that our research and our researchers are evolving somewhat. We're no longer cold researchers that are data-driven and are really measuring or assessing the wrong things. I'm proud to say that our measures and indicators are evolving. We're different. We're looking at things like important people and activities in one's life. We're looking at the importance of social support. We're looking at factors such as well-being, quality of life, emotional connectedness, and belonging. Those are exactly the types of things that are demonstrated in both the book and the film. And us as researchers are really looking at those factors on how important, meaningful, connected relationships, as well as activity across the lifespan, are just so important for healthy aging. And a new perspective on how, as we age and as we're living longer, the importance of keeping active, volunteering, finding those partner relationships that are vital to human quality of life. So I think we're meeting you guys somewhere in that middle ground, from your perspective and from a researcher perspective.
I want to ask Marty, earlier in the conversation, Marty, you described reading your wife's diaries and the fear that she expressed of what laid ahead of her. What about you? Did you ever feel that same fear or anxiety?
No question about that. Anticipatory grief. My dad would tell me never rush to meet the future. But as I began to understand so clearly about what the end result of Alzheimer's was, which was death, and also the gradual losing of one's cognitive abilities as well as physical abilities and so forth, it's so much so that it, as a caregiver, it affected my health. Well, one quick analogy that I want to give in hearing Steve talk about his film. If you take a funnel and you hold a small part of your funnel by your eye and you look up, you can see the whole expanse of the blue sky and a hope of tomorrow. As a person develops this Alzheimer's, that funnel becomes inversed. And now you have a large part at your eye and you look out and you only see a small hole. That is now your life. And so that's also what happens in the life of a caregiver, because you focus on trying to be the best caregiver you can, but every day it's a new normal because the disease regresses. One thing that is so exciting about Steve's project and his film is that he is able to have people and tell us about people who are able to look at the funnel with their small part by their eye, looking at hope and blue skies for tomorrow. And my gosh, for more people to understand that there is that potential out there. But then also for people who are caregivers to understand, you've got to understand the disease. If there is a medical doctor and there's a diagnosis of Alzheimer's, that there are two patients, and then also rather than, you know, understanding that worrying about the storm to pass, to try and understand how to dance in the rain and to steal these moments of joy from this terrible disease.
Steve, how about you? When you talked to the seniors involved in the speed dating, did they express a lot of fear or anxiety about what laid ahead for them?
Well, you know, you can't generalize to everybody. Different people had different views of aging. Probably the people who self-selected to sign up for a speed dating event would have more positive views of what lay ahead. So I probably have a little bit of a skewed sample there. But I think, you know, everybody was sort of a collection of all the fears, all the losses that they'd felt during their lifetime. You know, I think one example, you know, in listening to Marty too, is one gentleman told me that, you know, when I asked everybody, I guess one of my key questions was, how does love change? How does the need for, the search for, the experience of love change over a lifetime? And I remember he said to me that when I was young, I had to be something cool, and I had to be desirable. I had to make myself desirable by not being who I was necessarily, but by giving people what they wanted. You know, I had to have the best car and the best jokes and the coolest friends. He said, now that I'm older and alone and I'm looking for somebody to be with, it's more meaningful in some ways because I can share my fears about aging. I can share who I am and what I'm really feeling because I'm talking to somebody. We have nothing left to lose anymore. We have nothing left to hide. And it's more profound now that people can open up about what they've lost and what they hope for and what they need in a real way. And that makes him feel that more positive and hopeful about finding love, even if it's for just a short time, because he is older. He's still hoping that, or feeling that this is a way to finally express himself as he truly is and get over some of the fears.
Yeah, Marty, you're nodding your head as Steve describes what he heard from his subjects.
Well, I tell you, I do nod my head because one thing that this Alzheimer's disease has also taught me is that all of this superfluous stuff is superfluous. And it's the true meaning, it's the connection, it's the living for the moment. And gosh, I think about that, and I guess I'm going to now, because of hearing, I'm going to sell my fancy cars, I'm going to get rid of my aftershave lotion and even my silk suit with the blue suede shoes.
What does the future hold for you, Marty?
I tell you, one of the most important things in my life right now is to work and try and help caregivers learn, cope, and survive. And so the book, but also to visit with various groups around the country to try and have them understand if there's one thing worse than Alzheimer's, it's ignorance of the disease, and to try and have them understand the disease so that rather than worrying about the storm to pass, they can dance in the rain.
Steve, just a minute or two left. What's your advice to our listeners as they think of aging?
Well, I think that Marty makes an amazing point, which is that there's an educational aspect to all of this. I think the mainstream media has always been more committed to anti-aging, of the fear of aging, because of you know, all the downside that it could bring, and not making us aware that inside we still remain the same people needing the same things. I think one reason that this event is going to be very valuable is because this story is really not about aging. It's about what endures in our hearts and in who we are. Older people could see the story and feel very empowered by having people talk and express their voices and their feelings in a way that, you know, opens up a new conversation. And younger people, you know, baby boomers could address it, could ask their parents, are you lonely? What do you feel? You know, while they still have their parents there to talk to them about, to share emotional truths about their lives, which they never have. And even younger kids, you know, I've screened my film to high school audiences, and they'll afterwards say, I'll never look at my grandmother the same way again, because I've never imagined that an old person not getting the match they want at a love, at a speed dating event, could actually shed a tear over that. Like, how is that possible for somebody who's so far beyond that? And the fact that this event shows people that nobody is beyond the need for connection, to be seen and understood for who they are, to be not alone, I think is, and to be touched and held by another person, I think is really valuable.
Well, Marty and Steve, you both make, an absolute great case for our listeners to come out and hear your story in person. And Dean Sisler, that event is coming up March 1st on the UWM campus.
Yes, Thursday, March 1st, 4:30 to 7:30 at the Zalazo Center, which is at 2419 East Kenwood Boulevard.
And they can register. Just go to uwm.edu, and I believe it's /health/love. It again is coming up on March 1st at UWM. Marty, Steve, Ron, thank you so much for taking time today to share your stories. Look forward to seeing you at your event, and best wishes and good luck as you continue to see your own stories unfold and be told to others. And thank you for joining us for this edition of UWM Today. Take care, everybody. I'm Tom Lujack.
You've been listening to UWM Today with host Tom Lujack, the weekly program where you get to meet the people behind one of America's top research universities, University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Playing a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin, UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Learn more at uwm.edu.